Listening to the evening news here on WBAI 99.5, hosted by The Independent, New York's progressive newspaper. I'm Peter Rue. Our next guest is Tim Faust. He's the host of the Heavy Medical podcast and author of Health Justice Now, Single Payer, and What Comes Next. That's coming out later this year from Melville House. I began by asking Tim to explain Mayor Bill de Blasio's NYC Care plan announced earlier this month.
NYC Care is kind of a two-pronged program. One is bundling up a lot of existing services and making them more accessible, trying to integrate them so more folks can have access to the kinds of care that New York already provides, things like community clinics, even housing assistance. And then the other half is a $100 million projected expenditure on providing more health care to people that currently don't have it. For example, people who are undocumented immigrants, people who have slipped kind of beyond the cracks of the ACA, and other folks who aren't eligible for any kind of existing insurance.
Mm. And when de Blasio announced this on MSNBC, he used the word universal a lot, but this is not universal health care.
No, this is a caulk gun trying to fill in the various gaps that exist within New York health care. A combination of private insurance, publicly subsidized insurance, things like Metro Plus, Metro Health, which are city-subsidized local health care programs, Medicare, Medicaid. In theory, you know, if the machine were to work correctly, everybody would have access to health care. But what that access means, how much it's worth, and how much you're burned at the end of the day are still far from uniform. And there still is a kind of eligibility process. Some folks do find themselves eligible for care, and some folks aren't eligible for care. So no, this is not like a one-size-fits-all, everybody's eligible, everybody gets care kind of program.
Mm. De Blasio said Amazon is going to pay for this.
That really chaps my ass, right? They're saying that they... I'm sorry, I don't know if I can...
I think ass is
okay.
Fine.
This really bums me out. So yes, we're going to spend $100 million on NYC Care, and that money comes from the, what is it, $288 billion subsidy that we're giving Amazon to move into Long Island City. So, I mean, I'm not super good at math, but I have to presume that, gosh, I wish we could have spent that $288 billion, which is, of course, a combination of state and city funds and tax breaks on the folks who are just not getting health care in the first place, instead of, like, we're kind of doing the thing people do when they say the Super Bowl is going to be good for their town, right? Oh, if we build a new stadium and the Olympics come here or the Super Bowl comes here or whatever, we'll reap the benefits of people spending money, which, as far as I'm aware, has yet to ever pan out. What's underlying all of this is the fear of costs of the uninsured, right? Mm. Somebody, you know, God forbid, but somebody has an accident and goes to a hospital. Maybe somebody has untreated diabetes, and so they have cardiac failure, which is a comorbidity with diabetes, and they don't have insurance. Someone's got to foot that bill. It often goes to the state or to the city, and we can't afford. Hospitals charge an arm and a leg. It's $2,000 a night for inpatient stay. And so there's a couple of things there that aren't being addressed. One, the costs are much, much higher than they need to be in the U.S. compared to anywhere else in the world. MRIs are a good example because MRIs are pretty simple, right? It's a big tube. The tube prints money. You go get in the tube. Somebody pushes a button. It's the same procedure on the same machine performed anywhere in the U.S., and yet MRI costs are five times in New York what they are in Australia. Mm. For no good reason. The costs are just high because they can charge it. Mm. We're just being gouged by hospitals. They have monopolies. They have a pedigree. There's nobody really big enough to begin negotiating against them, right? The average insurer, even the city insurer, is too small to really bring down prices. Presby can just say, oh, no, we're not going to give you care. And there's no real counterweight to escalating costs. And they rise much, much faster than inflation, and they rise much, much faster than, again, what we see in literally any other country. It's not just hospitals, right? You've got drug companies, right? And so if you're a payer at the end of the day, like Medicaid or the city, it's got to pay for these costs. Like, you can either try to tilt against these massive titans of capital, or you can try to push everybody into insurance plans to try to prevent them getting those costs down the road. Which would be my second point. A lot of these costs happen because people aren't getting the care they need early enough in time. You get sick, for example. It's cold right now, right? Yesterday was like 5 degrees or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right now it's like 15 or 20. You get sick much faster of exposure than you do of cancer. So people go to the hospital because it's too like cold to exist outside, so they get sick and go to the hospital, and that racks up a lot of costs down the line. It seems like a much simpler and better solution is to give people housing instead of wait to bear those long-term costs or short-term costs when they're in the hospital. It seems like a much simpler investment of money is to just give people the food that they need, help people get these social services, these social workers they need to actually handle things like diabetes or cancer early and treat those when they happen and just pay those costs instead of like casting them out into the wild, letting these things gestate, metastasize, end up being much, much more expensive down the line. But instead of kind of that holistic model, we're just hoping we can show folks into insurance, kind of like delay the consequences of these costs at least another couple of years before anybody who's accountable for it is currently is still in office.
If we have a single payer system, would that alleviate some of the cost and maybe drive down the cost of care? Would that be part of the process?
Yes. Well, so the difference between a federal and a state single payer. I think, to answer your question, I think there's a lot of things a single payer can do to bring down short-term costs, and a lot of things that has the potential to do to bring down long-term costs, but they aren't necessarily inherent within the program itself. Just finally, a program has the potential to do these kinds of things and the resources to do so, and the negotiating weight. So a federal single payer is, and that's the thing that that I prefer, is a federal model in which all care for all people is paid for by a federal insurer. Instead of having a bunch of fragmented customer bases, a bunch of fragmented private insurers, which ultimately you're seeking to kind of like avoid paying the costs of sick people, a single payer eliminates all that and has one single pool for all people to receive all their care from the insurer. And all care means all care. Medical care, clinical care, dental care, vision care, and also, really importantly, long-term care for folks who are elderly or folks who have disability. That's what a single payer has to provide. And in doing so, it pushes none of the costs onto the person who is seeking care. Mm. We have kind of accepted that costs will always be high. And as a result, your insurer tries to dissuade you from seeking care by pushing costs of seeking care onto you. Mm. Co-pays, premiums, deductibles are all ways to make you reconsider whether you really need to go to the hospital or go see a doctor.
It basically cost out the patient.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Yeah. Even though you have insurance, you might be underinsured, which is like one of the real problems in American healthcare. Mm. If you make $45,000 a year and you legally, maybe even afford to get the insurance, you probably can't afford the costs of what happens if you get sick. Mm. You get sick, you slip a disc, you fall, you hit yourself, something happens. All of a sudden, you've got a $7,000 medical bill. And what is it? 40% of people in America can't afford a $400 out-of-pocket expense. So like you're just kind of screwed over.
You wanted to talk about the difference between a federal single-payer system and something that might be a prospect here in New York, which is single-payer here in the state. The governor said it's a good idea, but he wants to do it. It has to be done on a federal level. New York can't afford it. Can we afford it? I mean, covering everybody who's sick in our state, even though we have a pretty strong economy, that sounds tricky to some folks.
Cuomo is doing a reverse Pelosi, which I respect the hustle. I have two non-contradictory, but like challenging opinions at the same time. One is that like a state-based single payer cannot do the things a federal single payer can do to really realize long-term health equity for people. At the same time, New York can do a lot of things to make it better to be sick in New York. The New York Health Act can relieve a lot of people from the immiseration that's inflicted upon them by our massive and structural health inequity. But I don't think it is a sufficient long-term solution. Mm. We need to build the community structures which can demand not just the New York Health Act, but federal single payer. Not just that, but like single payer, whether in the Health Act or federally, is not enough. It's just a first step. Mm. And so we got to demand, we got to build that fiery demand for democratic control, local accountability of what healthcare means to us and how we give to people for food, for housing, for shelter, for safety, right? Like the core problems of health really boil down to things that are extra clinical. And those things are determined by structural causes, racism, sexism, and economic domination. Unless we actually tilt against these actual giants, if we build a thing that can endure belong the initial victory, I think we will win, because these are very simple and intuitive demands, and they're not that radical, right? What we have now is a pretty radical model where your ability to survive a sickness or your determination of whether you get to have home health or whether you're forced into a nursing home to die is predicated upon how much somebody can extract a profit from you. That's a radical.
That's pretty radical. Movement.
That's it for the WBAI Evening News, hosted by The Independent, New York's progressive newspaper. To listen to an extended version of Peter's interview with Tim Faust, subscribe to the Indie Audio Podcast on iTunes or find The Independent on SoundCloud. For more news from The Independent, visit independent.org, that's independent with a Y, or look for our print editions available citywide. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to WBAI. This is Kiani Brea with an announcement about your local station board elections. The election will close on March 5th, 2019. To confirm your eligibility to vote or to request a replacement ballot, please email les_wbai@pacifica.org or call 412-424-9569. For other important dates and for information about the candidates, please visit wbai.org.
Building Bridges, your community and labor report. From your workplace to your neighborhood, listen to the show that brings it all together. Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Bringing you news and analysis, local, national, and international. Monday nights, 7 p.m. We build bridges.
Come on, neighbors. Let's get wise.
So, the plaster is falling, the paint is peeling, the plumbing is leaking, the heat and hot water keep cutting off, the elevator keeps breaking down, and the landlord won't return your calls, but the rent keeps going up and up and up?
Find out what you can do about it. Tune in to Housing Notebook, Mondays at 8 p.m.
Reactionary landlord.
All your callers seem to be trapped by fear. They're afraid of chemtrails.
Not true. That's not true. That's not true. That's not true. That's not true.
Excessive consumerism, a consumption for profit system.
And you're purveying this.
That's not true either.
You know, make an automobile that can be used as a form of transportation, but maybe not be wasteful and constantly need to be replaced.
How do we know that you're not a tool of the corporation trying to frighten us with GMOs and chemtrails?
I'm not trying to frighten anyone. How do we know you're not an agent provocateur?
I'm Jeff Brady, host of In Other News. Tune in Monday at its new time, 9 p.m., right here on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York.
Barry, did you hear the news? Equal Time for Free Thought has a new early morning time on Tuesdays at 5 a.m.
I know. Now people can wake up to our unique approach to the big questions of life and the way a naturalistic worldview can help us become a more peaceful and just society.
And those who aren't early birds can still listen to our program later at WBAI.org.
Arnell, do you think it's some kind of miracle?
Yeah, not so much, but still. It's an excellent way for people to start their day. So tune in to Equal Time for Free Thought every Tuesday morning at 5 a.m. And remember to
tune in, pay it forward, and question everything.
This is Glenn Ford of Black Agenda Report, urging you to join the Black Alliance for Peace campaign to end AFRICOM. The U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM, embedded in 53 African nations, where it foments increased militarism and violence against civilian populations. The Black Alliance for Peace demands the withdrawal of all U.S. and NATO forces from Africa and the closure of all U.S. and NATO bases throughout the world. It's calling upon the Congressional Black Caucus to oppose AFRICOM and hold hearings on its impact on African people. The Black Alliance for Peace is asking WBAI listeners to go to our website and sign the online petition to shut down AFRICOM. Find out more at blackallianceforpeace.com. That's blackallianceforpeace.com.